In Hunan, an elderly woman in a wheelchair died outside a bank after being forced to appear in person to withdraw her own money for medical care. Too weak to pass mandatory facial recognition scans, she collapsed after repeated failed attempts. In a world increasingly permeated with technology, where even in-person physical interactions are being done with digital technology, this is the type of thing that is necessarily in our future unless we create systemic changes to how that technology works and how people are identified in the digital world. We have two different paths, and that is not the one that I want to be on. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we are getting into the Financial Freedom Report from the HRF today. There's been a couple of interesting things from the last few Freedom Reports, but there was one in, I think this is 75, if I'm not mistaken, that I saved, that I wanted to talk about because I even posted about it on Twitter and Noster, and it just has gotten me thinking. I haven't been able to stop thinking about it for like a week, and I think not only is it just a wild story in and of itself, but it's an example of so many different things about the path that we are currently going down, or about one of the paths that we have as an option here. And this is exactly why I don't think there's an alternative to kind of the Noster Bitcoin future, because technology is moving this way. And we're not going to stop technology, which means that there are two different ways that we can use technology going into this future, and there are only two different ways that are quote-unquote sustainable. I actually don't think the other way is sustainable at all, and it's arguable that, you know, the reason tyranny is basically the only way that that path of the structure can develop is specifically because of that, is because it is not sustainable. But we'll get into that in the guy's take. Just a shout out to the HRF for supporting my work, the Human Rights Foundation. And I've also actually got a couple things that I wanted to. I've got so much saved from the Oslo Freedom Forum that finished up just a little while ago. I've only gotten to watch like one or two things. But there are a couple that I really wanted to mention and bring up some of the things. And I will have links to those in the show notes as well. In fact, maybe for the stuff that I've saved, maybe I'll make it like a playlist or something. I think I can share playlists of stuff that I have saved. So maybe we'll do that. Check the show notes. It'll all be down there. A quick shout out to BitKit Wallet, the mobile and Lightning, the on-chain and Lightning wallet for mobile that is non-custodial. If you're looking for one that lets you hold your keys and just has it so that it is simple, it is intuitive, and it just works, and you wanted to try out Lightning, this is a great one to get started with. Links and details in the show notes. All right, with that, let's go ahead and get into the read. This is the Financial Freedom Report from the Human Rights Foundation, number 75. The HRF's Weekly Financial Freedom Report, number 75, May 22nd, 2025. Today, we begin in China, where the central bank injected $138 billion into the economy and expanded the money supply by 12.5% year over year, as the regime eases monetary conditions to prop up a decelerating economy. Chinese citizens are rushing to preserve their savings, evidenced by Bitcoin/CNY, or Chinese Yuan, trading activity jumping over 20% on the news. But while some escape to harder money, others remain trapped. In Hunan, an elderly Chinese woman died outside a bank after being forced to appear in person in order to withdraw her own money for medical care. In Central America, Salvadoran President Bukele revived a foreign agents bill that would impose a 30% tax on foreign-funded NGOs, threatening to financially crush organizations that hold those in power accountable and protect journalists and civil society. The proposal mirrors laws used in Russia, China, Belarus, and beyond to suppress dissent, and it arrives amid Bukele's authoritarian drift and increasing threats to independent journalists. In Open Source News, we highlight a new tool called ChapSmart, a Bitcoin-powered remittance service that allows users to send Bitcoin to citizens and families in Tanzania and have it dispersed in Tanzanian shillings via M-Pesa. This tool is increasingly helpful as the Tanzanian regime tightens control over foreign currency, mandating that all transactions be conducted in TZS, or Tanzanian shillings. ChapSmart provides an accessible way for nonprofits and dissidents to access value from abroad using Bitcoin. We end with an Ask Me Anything, an AMA, with Bitcoin educator Anita Posh on Stacker News, who shares her thoughts, experiences, and views from her time conducting Bitcoin education in authoritarian regimes in Africa. We also feature an article from Togolese human rights advocate Farida Nabarema, who critiques Nigeria's new investment act for classifying Bitcoin as a security and for the regulatory hurdles this will impose on the grassroots adoption of freedom tech in the country. Be sure to tune in next week at 2 p.m. Oslo time on Wednesday, May 28th, as the Oslo Freedom Forum's Freedom Tech Track airs on Bitcoin Magazine's livestream channels, headlined by speakers Zaya Sadir, Abubakar Nur Khalil, Amiti Utorwar, Kali, Sarah Kreps, Ben Perrin, and many more. Now, let's read on. Global News. El Salvador. Bukele reintroduces foreign agents bill. In El Salvador, President Nayib Bukele revived a controversial foreign agents bill that threatens to severely restrict the finances and operations of NGOs. While the bill is not finalized, Bukele shared on X that the proposal would impose a 30% tax on donations to NGOs receiving foreign funding. This punitive financial measure alone would severely restrict Salvadoran organizations that protect independent journalism, advocate for human rights, and hold the government accountable. In neighboring Nicaragua, a similar foreign agents law has enabled the closure of more than 3,500 NGOs. El Salvador's foreign agents bill arrives alongside other alarming moves, including arrest warrants against El Faro journalists, the arrest of human rights lawyer Ruth Lopez, and the detention of more than 200 Venezuelan migrants under dubious claims of gang affiliation. China injects billions to stabilize economy. The Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, has injected $138 billion in liquidity through interest rate cuts and a 0.5% reduction in banks' reserve requirements, in effect expanding the money supply by 12.5% year over year. While the state eases monetary conditions to prop up a fragile system, ordinary citizens are left scrambling to preserve the value of their savings. Bitcoin Chinese yuan trading volumes jumped over 20% in response as people sought refuge from a weakening yuan. But while some can quietly escape to harder money, others are trapped in a system that treats access to money as a privilege. In Henan, an elderly woman in a wheelchair died outside a bank after being forced to appear in person to withdraw her own money for medical care. Too weak to pass mandatory facial recognition scans, she collapsed after repeated failed attempts. Thailand plans to issue new investment token. Thailand's Ministry of Finance plans to issue 5 billion baht, or $151 million worth of, quote, G-tokens, a new digital investment scheme that allows Thais to buy government bonds for as little as 100 baht, or $3. Officials claim the project will democratize access to state-backed investments and offer higher returns than traditional bank deposits. But in a country rapidly advancing central bank digital currency infrastructure, or CBDCs, this initiative raises apparent concerns. The move closely follows Thailand's repeated digital cash handouts via a state-run wallet app, which restricts spending, tracks user behavior, and enforces expiration dates on money, all clear hallmarks of a CBDC. Luckily, the Thai government postponed the latest handout, but the infrastructure remains. Framing this project as inclusionary masks the reality. Thailand is building state-run digital systems that give the regime more power over citizens' savings and spending. Russia outlaws Amnesty International. Russia officially banned Amnesty International, designating it as an undesirable organization, quote-unquote, and criminalizing cooperation with the Global Human Rights Group. Russian officials claim Amnesty promotes Russophobic projects and undermines national security. This adds to the Kremlin's assault on dissent, targeting human rights advocates, independent journalists, and civil society in the years since the 2022 full-scale invasion of Ukraine. The designation exposes anyone financially, publicly, or privately supporting Amnesty's work to prosecution and imprisonment up to 5 years. With more than 220 organizations now blacklisted, Russia is systematically cutting off avenues for international accountability and isolating Russians from external support. Bitcoin and Freedom Tech News. ChapSmart, permissionless remittances in Tanzania. ChapSmart is a Bitcoin-powered remittance service that allows users to send money to individuals and families in Tanzania while having it dispersed in Tanzanian shillings via M-Pesa. With ChapSmart, no account is needed. Just enter your name, email, and the recipient's M-Pesa details. Choose how much USD to send, pay in Bitcoin via the Lightning Network, and ChapSmart delivers Tanzanian shillings instantly to the recipient's M-Pesa account with zero fees. This tool is especially useful as Tanzania's regime enacts restrictions on foreign currencies, banning most citizens from quoting prices or accepting payment in anything other than Tanzanian shillings. ChapSmart offers a practical and accessible way for families, nonprofits, and individuals to access value from abroad using Bitcoin, even as the state tries to shut down financial alternatives. BitKey, multi-signature for families protecting wealth from state seizure. Decades ago, Ivy Galindo's family lost their savings overnight when the Brazilian government froze citizens' bank accounts to, quote, fight inflation. That moment shaped her understanding of financial repression and why permissionless tools like Bitcoin are essential. When her parents later chose to start saving in Bitcoin, Ivy knew a wallet with a single private key wasn't enough, as it can be lost, stolen, or handed over under pressure or coercion from corrupt law enforcement or state officials. Multi-signature or multi-sig wallets, which require approval from multiple private keys to move funds, offer stronger protection against this loss and coercion, and eliminate any single points of failure in a Bitcoin self-custody setup. But multi-sig setups are often too technical for everyday families. Enter BitKey. This multi-sig device offered Ivy's family a simple, secure way to share custody of their Bitcoin in the face of financial repression. In places where wealth confiscation and frozen bank accounts are a lived reality, multi-signature wallets can help families stay in full control of their savings. Parasite Pool, new zero-fee Lightning-native Bitcoin mining pool. Parasite Pool is a new open-source Bitcoin mining pool built for home miners who want to contribute to Bitcoin's decentralization without relying on the large and centralized mining pools. It charges zero fees and offers Lightning-native payouts with a low 10 Satoshi threshold, allowing individuals to earn directly and instantly. Notably, it has a plebs eat first reward structure, which allocates one Bitcoin to the block finder and splits the remaining 2.125 Bitcoin plus fees among all non-winning participants via Lightning. This favors small-scale miners, who can earn outsized rewards relative to their hash power, inverting the corporate bias of legacy mining pools. This makes Parasite Pool especially attractive for small-scale miners, such as those operating in authoritarian contexts who need to mine discreetly and independently. In turn, these very same miners contribute to the Bitcoin network's resistance to censorship, regulatory capture, and corporate control, ensuring it remains a tool for freedom and peaceful resistance for those who need it most. Learn more about the mining pool here. Cake Wallet implements PayJoin version 2. Cake Wallet, a non-custodial, privacy-focused, and open-source mobile Bitcoin wallet, released version 4.28, bringing PayJoin version 2 to its user base. PayJoin is a privacy technique that allows two users to contribute an input to a Bitcoin transaction, breaking the common chain analysis heuristic that assumes a sender owns all inputs. This makes it harder for dictators to trace payments or link the identities of activists or nonprofits. Unlike the original PayJoin, which required both the sender and recipient to be online and operate a PayJoin server, PayJoin V2 removes both barriers and introduces asynchronous transactions and serverless communication. This means users can now conduct private transactions without coordination or technical setup, making private Bitcoin transactions more accessible and expanding the tools dissidents have to transact in the face of censorship, extortion, and surveillance. HRF is pleased to have sponsored the PayJoin V2 specification with a bounty and is happy to see this functionality now in the wild. MePrimer Bitcoin receives grant from hashtag start small. MePrimer Bitcoin, a nonprofit organization supporting independent Bitcoin education in Central America, announced that it received a $1 million grant from Jack Dorsey's Start Small Public Fund. This support will accelerate MePrimer Bitcoin's impartial, community-led, Bitcoin-only education. The initiative has trained tens of thousands of students while supporting over 65 grassroots projects across 35 countries through its independent Bitcoin Educators Node Network, pushing financial freedom forward where needed most. The MePrimer Bitcoin, or MPB, team stresses the importance of remaining free from government or corporate influence to preserve the integrity of their mission. As founder John Dennehy puts it, quote, "Education will be captured by whoever funds it. We need to create alternative models for the revolution of Bitcoin education to realize its full potential." MPB has been adopted by many education initiatives working under authoritarian regimes. Phoenix Wallet introduces unlimited Bolt 12 offers and manual backup options. Phoenix Wallet, a mobile Bitcoin Lightning wallet, introduced support for unlimited Bolt 12 offers in its V2.6.0 update, allowing users to generate as many reusable Lightning invoices as they like. These offers, which function like static Bitcoin addresses, remain permanently valid and can now include a custom description and amount, ideal for nonprofits or dissidents who need to receive regular donations discreetly. The update also introduces manual export and import of the payments database on Android, enabling users to securely transfer their payment history to new devices. These updates strengthen Phoenix's position as one of the most user-friendly and feature-complete non-custodial Lightning wallets. Bolt 12, once a pipe dream, is now a usable activist tool on popularly accessible mobile wallets. Recommended content. Bitcoin is not a security. Why Nigeria's New Investment and Security Act Misses the Mark, by Farida Naburema. In this article, Togolese human rights advocate Farida Naburema critiques Nigeria's 2025 Investment and Securities Act for classifying Bitcoin as a security. Naburema argues this approach is flawed, economically damaging, disconnected from the realities of Bitcoin usage and innovation across Africa, and an attempt to constrict a human rights tool. She warns that this regulatory framework risks stifling builders and harming the very communities that Bitcoin is helping in a context of widespread currency devaluations, inflation, and exclusion. Read it here. The link will be in the show notes. And lastly, the Ask Me Anything with Anita Posh, available on Stacker News. After spending 5 months traveling through countries like Kenya and Zimbabwe, Bitcoin for Fairness founder Anita Posh joined Stacker News for an Ask Me Anything to discuss her view on Bitcoin adoption across the continent. She highlighted major progress since 2020, noting that several grassroots initiatives she supported have become self-sufficient and are now running their own education programs. Despite persistent challenges like wallet usability, high on-chain fees, and Bitcoin's misunderstood reputation, she shared stories of real-life impact, including cross-border remittances using mobile airtime and widespread Lightning use via apps like Tondo in Kenya. Read the full conversation here. The link in the show notes. All right, don't forget to subscribe to the Financial Freedom Report. They do this pretty much every week. Last few weeks, they've had, there's a really great piece that they have on the history of the development fund, because that one is, what are they, 4 years old now or 5 years old? It's the 5 year anniversary. But they have put so much towards like just so many different projects. They've been really good about kind of like boots on the ground education projects all across the South America and Africa, and basically in all of the areas that need it the most around the world. They have done a fantastic job of basically focusing on that. And then they put in so many bounties on like privacy tools, and like I've seen them in their process too of like, you know, asking the question. It's like, all right, how would dissidents use this? How would journalists be able to submit to this or receive payment privately? Like how would they get caught? And, you know, are they having to host this? And how do they host it? Is this difficult to host? And the one time I got to go to the Oslo Freedom Forum, which I hope to go back again, but I got invited, I guess it was 2021 because we were still in the, did you get your vaccine and or get tested for COVID or whatever zone. But, dude, so many of the conversations I had there still, like I still remember them. And I remember some because there was someone who literally got, like, it was crazy. You know, they have these what's the Pegasus? Pegasus is that crazy software that will just basically take over your phone. It has, like, it's a nation state level software. And this was like rented out. It was literally just given to some authoritarian regime, which I don't remember what it was, but I remember thinking that, like, what? Like, they're just like kind of like, oh yeah, sure, crazy tyrant in some little country where you're literally just cutting the heads off of journalists who criticize you. Here's our, like, God mode software that will just literally take over and do whatever the hell they want to people's phones. And there were a number of people who were at the conference. I remember, like, getting, like, real nervous. Like, oh my God, like, what? You know, the level of, like, the networks and the quote-unquote lists that they're building, because I took my normal phone to this thing and people had just gotten completely pwned by this thing being rented out from Western nations to literal tyrants and authoritarian regimes just because, oh yeah sure, we'll make a little money and, you know, get you in our pocket. It's so comically, like, contradictory, and like the juxtaposition of that with Western nations care about freedom and they care about the people. It's like, no, they don't. They don't care about you or me or any of us any more than they care about whoever the hell that authoritarian was going to use Pegasus on to obliterate somebody's life and probably kill them, because that's generally what they do. They do whatever they can to destroy their life and get them out of the way. And there's still an enormous amount of technology that we need to build to basically obsolete those problems. And all of those problems are getting worse at the exact same time. And I'm increasingly, I was just talking about this the other day because my phone, I updated my phone and I couldn't turn it off. There was some sort of a software bug, and I finally figured it out. Well, I used a suggestion for somebody, I think it was on Noster actually, of going into settings and going down to the bottom of the menu, and there's a shut the phone off option. But I literally couldn't cut my phone off. I was holding down the buttons, and, you know, it's supposed to change the screen and give you the slide to power off. And something about the software was just hung up and it wouldn't work. And I could not cut the thing off. And in addition, at the exact same time, I try to use guided access so that my son can, you know, if we're like driving in the car or something, I'm trying to show him like Curious George, just because, you know, 3 hours in the car is a nightmare for a 3-year-old. Bored out of his mind after he gets up from his nap. But I was trying to use guided access because he, you know, holds it and it will, his thumb or the hand will cover up the edge, and every edge, no matter what you do, if you swipe or do anything on any edge on an iPhone, there's a button or something that you swipe to the next app or you swipe up to notifications or whatever. So I turn on guided access so that if when he inevitably accidentally touches the screen, he doesn't cut off his show. Well, I was trying to use that and that is grayed out. And now I've closed every app. I've had a bunch of people, and I asked Perplexity for, you know, 100 different examples or reasons why it would show up as grayed out, and it just wouldn't work. I don't know exactly what it was. I even restarted it and it was still just grayed out in settings. It wouldn't work doing the triple click thing. And I don't know, I went through a whole bunch of different stuff and then it just started working again. I have no idea what it was that actually fixed it. I tried to change the settings back. It didn't unfix it. I have no idea what it was. Some sort of just glitch. But all of this is just kind of a tangent to talk about how much it bothers me how little control I have over this device now. That a software bug can prevent me from cutting the phone off. And increasingly, not only how huge of a security risk that is, but just how bad the failure mode is on so much of this stuff, and that this is like becoming broadly the trend of all tech, is that everything is smart and everything has computer-based buttons. And like, it took us forever to try to, like, we still just try to get the simplest thing that we could possibly get, but we still had to get a quote-unquote smart washing machine. I don't want a smart washing machine. I just want something that washes clothes. I don't want something that will have to freeze or have a computer bug and have to unplug it and restart it, or even worse, the way these stupid things are designed is they get hung up and you have to have like an official, like, licensed repairman code thing. It's basically like a cryptogram, like a signing key that they have, so that you can't actually boot the computer back up. I had somebody that literally there was like a tiny thing to be fixed on it, and you couldn't do it without calling an official repairman of the official company to come out, pay them like $250 to replace some $3 component, and then basically give the official access to turn the computer back on so the device would actually work. Not to mention that none of them last. The age of these things, they age at like 10 times the rate of something that's just a simple mechanical thing that just works. You need like 5 components to make a solid working washing machine or dryer. But the risk of these things, like the failure mode, the same thing on a car. Teslas have electronic door handles. And if there's some sort of problem with the computer or the battery, you can't open the door. Like, that's such a, like, I don't understand how we have gone so far to put so much risk on the user because we simply do not think about the failure mode. Like, what happened to engineering and thinking about the entire system from the context of when something goes wrong? Does it still work, or does it lock the user in the car while the car burns? Because that has literally happened with Teslas, because there's some sort of a failure and the freaking batteries ignite, and then they can't open the door because it's a freaking electronic hook. Like, that's not a small mistake in thinking about when and how these things could go wrong. Like, everything breaks. Everything that can get exploited will get exploited. Every system that can be infiltrated or spammed will get infiltrated or spammed. It's just a matter of time. And if we don't think, like, we've created so much systemic fragility in so many different ways. It's a lot like, you know, when you think about like the fiat mindset of, oh, everything centralized is more efficient. And so many people talk about economies of scale when discussing the centralization and the ever consolidation of the farming system in the United States, or the consolidation of all different types of industries and these things, and talk about it as if this is a natural thing, and that just because you have economies of scale, which is obviously true, that means that you always in a market economy tend toward centralization, without recognizing that the largest and most important artificial, that's the most important thing to understand, the artificial push for centralization and consolidation is financing, is the fact that the bigger you are, the cheaper your debt is, even when you have already when you have the largest market share. You should not be able to just get an infinite amount of debt for free. But crazy enough, that's literally how our system works, when they actually don't even have the capacity or the growth potential to make 5, 10% or 20% growth because they're already market saturated. They're still the ones that get access to the most capital. Their stock goes up by default 7 to 10% because they're going to keep up better than inflation. Everybody's pushed their pensions and their retirements into stocks, which they never should have been in stocks in the first place. And they're now, quote unquote, investors in these huge indexes when they don't know the first thing about investing. They don't understand why you would put money in anything. They just think that the stock market goes up, and so you should put money in the stock market. And then lo and behold, giant corporations have access to all of our retirement accounts and all of our pensions and every bit of money that we ever had while we blindly give it to them, and then they use it to just consolidate, just buy up all their competitors, buy up as much industry control as they can, and then go into this vertical system of just like, all right, well, I'll buy the industry that I have to buy products from so that I own that industry too. And the consolidation just exponentially reinforces itself. None of that is natural. And economies of scale is counteracted by a very, also very natural problem or natural tendency of the market is that the bigger you are, the harder it is for you to change. The mobility and the speed at which things change in the economy is a massive obliterator of the benefit of economies of scale, because you're talking about manufacturing that gets built out, or massive infrastructure that gets built out a certain and very specific way. And as soon as technology changes enough, all of that shit is out of date. All of that stuff is wasteful. Economies of scale is simply one of many different major forces in the economy, and it doesn't mean that we consolidate everything. In fact, there are numerous different forces against that consolidation, and it is only the slowest of slowest technological progress industries that end up really benefiting from economies of scale for long periods of time. It is because of the nature of fiat finance that we have this problem to such a degree, and it never seems to matter in any other context, because fiat is big for the sake of big. How do we just keep pushing the financing? How do we just make things quote-unquote more efficient, and we can just consolidate another 100 companies into just two companies, and we can get 3% better benefit? That is not natural. And importantly, the most important part of that, the most important problem of that, is how unbelievably systemically fragile it makes us. If there's one company doing farming one way in corporate farms all across the entire United States, if there is one significant fallout, if there is one problem in the way they are doing their corporate farming that has some sort of a consequence of poisoning the water or slowly draining the soil of this or that resource, well, then you've disallowed the economy from having any alternative. You've made it so that when that problem comes to fruition, when it really starts, when the bill comes due from that one small imbalance, maybe it takes 50 years, but when the bill comes due, we all pay for it all at once by the destruction of an entire industry. And then you have to break it up into the million pieces it should have been from the get-go and try to slowly rebuild. And you have this massive swing back in the other direction. It's the exact same form of a debt bubble, except in a systemic bubble, an infrastructure bubble, where you're doing too many things one way rather than in the variance that the natural economy actually needs, and in order to actually adapt to all of the different changing technologies and the constant shifts and new ideas that are actually being implemented. It's not robust. It loses all robustness. It loses all security. It becomes fragile, and it becomes, quote unquote, hard, in the sense that it becomes big and controlling, but it breaks very easily. It's like a ceramic plate. It might seem hard, and it might seem like something that's very difficult, but the second it cracks, it shatters into a million pieces. This is how we have designed our economy. This is how things have moved over the last 50 to 70 years. And we're seeing it everywhere. We're seeing it in design philosophy. This is the same mental problem, the broken mental framing of things like electronic freaking door handles. It's thoughtless, and it's just trying to do everything the same way for the sake of doing it because it's the new thing. And the less competition you have, the more likely you are to have one problem that affects everybody. And when it becomes a problem, when it becomes, again, when the bill comes due for that mistake or the one thing that does, I mean, again, it might not even be a mistake for 20 years. It might not be until you have two or three other layers of technology that keep up that suddenly there is some sort of a fallout from it. But when it comes, we pay for it all at once. And the damage that it does is 100 times larger than it ever needed to be because of the artificial consolidation of the fiat system. And it poisons everything. Like, when you poison the money, you poison everything about how people think, about how and when people buy and sell businesses. Like, one of the biggest things in the 70s, if you started a business, the whole idea was to have a successful business. And slowly, this started to shift in the 80s and then the 90s. And now you'll actually see, and you can actually look at this trend. You'll see this trend over like 40 to 50 years, that it went from like you start a business to become a successful business to you start a business to get bailed out by the big corporation. Like you start a business now to get VC funded so that they can cash out when a giant corporation buys them. That is like 90% of VC now. That's like the process is how do we make a new business that gets consolidated into the giant corporations? Why do the giant corporations just have an unlimited pocket? Why do they just have unlimited money? They don't actually have unlimited money. But you know what they can do? They can just borrow money that gets printed out of thin air, handed to them at like 0.5 or 1% interest rate. The Federal Reserve, the central bank, literally buys their debt for free as a way of saving the economy. This is an insane system, and people just don't realize how bad it is. It has gotten and how unbelievably unnatural it really is. And the problem is that the consequences seem to be small for a really, really long time until they're huge, until they're massive. Like there's a literal risk right now that we poison the soil. The United States has some of the best and most productive farmland on planet Earth. And there is a real reality that in like 10 to 15 years, we can't grow anything if we keep doing what we are doing. With the pesticides and the aluminum and the mercury and all the shit that we are putting in the soil and the rivers, there is a huge potential cost in the way that we are doing things, and we just keep consolidating. It's just feeding this same system over and over and over again. And I specifically wanted to read this Financial Freedom Report because of the story at the beginning in China is talking about the two different paths that technology essentially has, basically the two different paths we have to take forward is with the rise of AI in particular, but I think it's just kind of a continuation of the same trends. It's just an acceleration of it, of fake everything, of generative everything, where visual effects were always just going to be easy. Generating a video of somebody was always just going to get easier and easier. Putting somebody else's face on yours. Digital verification has always gotten more and more difficult and more onerous and complicated to basically prove that you are who you are and you're your account owner. And then again, actually, this is a great example, actually, of something where the consolidation and universality of the way people do things or the way something works for some time. Usernames and passwords and just having like an account at a centralized service. This works for a really long time. Until the technology gets to the point where it's difficult, like back in, you know, the 1990s, this was a perfect way of doing things, of just kind of duct taping things together, because the risk of getting hacked and having a lot of information like dumped on the internet wasn't huge, because there wasn't even enough people on the internet. And in addition, the amount of like critical information and like value and money, like nobody did online banking in the 90s, really. We didn't do stock trading. You couldn't destroy the stock market with a hack in the 1990s. There just wasn't enough critical infrastructure and value in the online world that it didn't seem that important to build a structure that would actually sustain itself in 30 years when you actually did build out 100 new layers of technology. Everybody is online all the time. In fact, everybody's got screen time problems and they want to just get the hell away from their phone for a minute because it's now an addiction and it's a huge problem. But now everything is online. All of our money is online. All of our cards are digital. All of our bank, access to all of our bank accounts is digital. The bank I work with got rid of their desk. They got rid of their desk. You don't really do anything in the vault. The vault doesn't hold anything anymore. It's basically like a bunch of security deposit boxes. Everything we use is like apps. They're secondary apps. They're fintech, which uses APIs to some banking infrastructure somewhere. In that world, suddenly the username and password problem is a huge problem. And the fallout is massive. And costs of chargebacks and fraud is not only like a huge portion, like a significant percentage now of online activity, but it's worse every single year, to the point that JP Morgan actually put out a memo talking about if we do not like fundamentally change how our systems work and think about this as users having, they specifically mentioned, I'm going to have to dig into this, and this might actually be a read on the show because this is worth a guy's take probably to dig into, but I want to say they specifically said something about like users needing keys or something, like some sort of way of thinking about cryptographic keys. I wish I could remember, but I remember thinking as I was reading it, oh my God, they're talking about a push payment system, that you cannot have a pull system anymore because of how dangerous and what the concept. And this was a very like, guys, this is a wake up call. We need to be thinking about this because there's something very, very rotten in the state of Denmark. There's a very systemic problem that is coming to the surface and has a trend in one direction. And this goes back to and this is the one that I tweeted about, was the old woman who was sick and could not prove her identity digitally and was forced to physically go to the bank in her wheelchair. And they tried to use the facial, she is trying to get her own money to pay for her own medical care. And she is so sick that she cannot pass the facial recognition that they have at the bank. And she literally died at the bank trying to get access to her money. This is that path. This is the current path that we are on. Because the only way to actually deal with the level of fraud that is going on, the only way to actually deal with everything AI and the fact that now you can so easily just put somebody's face on your own or completely change the environment live with, you know, holding up the piece of paper that says I'm this user at this date. That is not a means of verification anymore. A selfie is not verification of anything anymore. Anybody who is slightly clever or technically inclined or has access to the right tools can not only do that, but they can actually ChatGPT or Perplexity or Claude or whatever. They can vibe code their own little like integration to get around whatever app they are that they're having to use this with so that you can make a fake camera. It's not that hard to make a fake camera or input or output on a computer so that it looks like you're using your camera when really it's going to your app that's talking to ChatGPT video generator or image generator and then giving it back to the app that's trying to get you to prove that you are this other person or, you know, obviously you are yourself. That is only going to get worse and it's going to get so much more onerous because there's no way. And the only way to actually attempt to understand this is important because it's not even if you're authoritarian or a tyrant or want surveillance everything or want to control and see and be and to watch every single thing that every single person does. You have to. Even the people who would rather not, who don't want it to be that way, they are going to get drowned in so much fraud. If they are trying to stay in the fiat system, they're trying to stay in the old username and password, verify that you're human model. If they do not move away from that, they will end up looking exactly like an authoritarian regime or a giant Chinese surveillance apparatus because it's the only way to actually keep up with how bad the problem is becoming. to the point that an old woman who was trying to get her own money out of the bank is trying to pass an in-person facial recognition scan, and she dies because she is too sick to pass it, and she literally cannot get her own money to pay for her own medical care. The only way that it doesn't continue to push in that direction is if technology stops. It's not going to stop. It's not going to stop. And the legacy system and the legacy thinking is going to keep producing these types of results more and more, in exactly the same way that fraud becomes a bigger and bigger problem, that hacks that leak hundreds of thousands of social security numbers and usernames and passwords. And the irony is that I've been thinking about this today, and I literally got an email from your Coinbase account is out of date. I can't even remember what it was, but it's some crap. I got a text and an email about my Coinbase account, which I don't even think I have a Coinbase account still. I guess the information that leaked is from 10 years ago, and they still think that I use Coinbase. But it's a scam from the recent Coinbase hack, and my information is out there somewhere. I get so many scam calls a day. While I was recording this, I got a scam call, and I had to shut it up because it literally takes over my mic and it screws up the recording, and that is like profoundly annoying. Like, I'm in the middle of like working and like I'm on a roll and I'm thinking about something and I'm getting into a rant, and then a stupid call comes up, and 90% of the time I get way more calls from scams and just nonsense. Like, it's crazy. I could literally block everything except for the people in my favorites list, and 98% of calls just wouldn't go through. It would stop so many freaking phone calls. In fact, I bet you that I get one before I finish this episode, and I'm just a couple of minutes from being done. We'll see. I'm not sending everybody who listens to this sats if I'm wrong. But this is why I think a push system and key-based systems are literally the only way forward. The degree of difficulty and the structure of just utter, like, the awful user experience that will consistently get worse and worse and worse, or more and more and more invasive, and take away more and more control from the user themselves. Just like, I don't seem to have any control over my iPhone anymore. I can't even cut the damn thing off when I want to. The worse, that is just going to continue to get worse and worse and worse until we actually realize that the whole idea of security is upside down in the way the internet works now. And this is why I'm so interested in things like PubKey and Nostr and obviously Bitcoin and the Pear stack and all of this stuff, is because I think this is a necessity. This is not a nice to have. This is the only way that you actually have an open internet still, because our old models only worked with the old tech. It only worked had the technology of the internet frozen in like 2007. Then, okay, maybe we could have just kept doing that. And this is exactly why there's so much weakness. There's so much fragility. There is that fragile hardness of locking in and putting everybody into one type of system or one type of structure and one network. You know, everybody's on X and everybody's on Apple platforms. Is sure, that works, and you can lock everybody in, and there's a huge cost to trying to leave those platforms and get out of those centralized entities. But you also increase the inevitable cost over the long term, when the fallout from the way of doing things stops working. Well, this is why I don't want. And my wife was like, no, you're not. You know, I've made friends and family get on all sorts of new, oh, this is a new private and a new security app, and, you know, get on Signal, get on Keat, and all this stuff. But I'm having a problem. Like, I still love my Mac, and I still feel like I have control over my Mac, because every time it tells you, this is not a real developer, I know I can just change the permissions and, you know, install whatever I want to install or use it however I want to use it. But increasingly, the feeling like I have less and less control, especially in the iPhone situation, makes me want, like, I want something that has a physical off button that literally cuts the power from the battery. I don't want a software system that says, you know, right now we should stop using power and we should cut the energy off to this part of the device. No, I want a physical cut it off button. And for a long time, you know, like the Librafone or whatever, I mean, I've considered getting that one too, even though it's really expensive for its stats because, you know, economies of scale, right? Is the more of these devices you can produce, the lower the margin you can have. And so if you're not producing a million of these things, it's really, really hard to actually make any money off of it because you still have to build all the exact same infrastructure and this enormous upfront costs into actually doing this. But I think there is this massive pressure building and this slow shift back to grounded technology is kind of how I think about it, is this step back to reality. And realizing where we have gone, swung the pendulum way too far. Like, a smart refrigerator is kind of a perfect example. I do not need notifications from my damn refrigerator. Like, the last thing I need is for the refrigerator to tell me when the milk is bad. I can read the date on the carton and I can smell the milk. I do not need the refrigerator to have a computer in it. I don't need it to have cameras looking inside or outside. I do not care. I want it to be a box that keeps stuff cold. And we have so many of these problems because we literally have like one or two manufacturers that basically put a different facade on the exact same stuff. And I feel like we have the same thing with cars. Like, so many of the cars today are interchangeable. So many of the appliances are interchangeable. And I find out that, oh, Whirlpool and Frigidaire and all of these things, I just find out that, oh, well, the reason this is the way it is because it's actually the exact same manufacturer. It's a different reseller. So it's like they just stick their brands on the exact same thing. The exact same thing. And they just, like, tweak something, or they put shelves in that look a little bit different, and they're the big mold that they just out to the inside, the interior of the refrigerator is like a little bit different, but it's all the same crap. It's all built by the same people. It all came from the same place. And there's like all this appearance that you're buying from like 20 different brands when you go into the store, and there's actually like three. This is why it's so hard to find variety, because you're like, I guess the consumers have just asked for it. The market has just asked for it to be this way because this brand has it, and so does this brand, and so does this brand. So I guess, I don't know, everybody wants a smart washer, right? I don't know anybody who actually likes the smart washer. But because of the control and market share and the endless financing, it seems like that's the only thing that you can get. And yet I see, you know, this post on X or whatever of this dude who took a refrigerator that was still running for like 1970 and he left the freaking freezer door open and put a multimeter on it to see how much power it was using as he left it open all day. And all day, it stayed cold, it stayed frozen, and it used almost no energy. It was way less energy than his stupid, like, Energy Star plus brand new smart refrigerator. And this was literally... it could not be dumber. You could open up the back and point at the four different components, the compressor, the pipe, and the box that keeps stuff cold. And he had the door open the entire time. And there was still just ice crusted in this thing for the entire day out in the middle of day heat. And it was like in Texas or something. And this post gets like hundreds of thousands of likes and retweets. And I'm like, do you not realize that that means that the market is actually screaming, give me a cheap and simple refrigerator? Like, everybody is recognizing that that is a problem. Why is it not being fulfilled? Why is the market still consolidated on a bunch of people who are apparently building things that are completely out of touch with what the actual market is demanding? It is the fiatification of everything. A perfect example, actually, is... I think it was Lynn Alden's piece, or maybe it was Sam Callahan. No, that was about Bitcoin being a A correlator to global liquidity was the one by Sam Callahan that Lynn Alden commissioned. I don't know. Maybe it was a Lynn Alden piece. I could be getting it wrong. But talking about how fiscal dominance, where so much of the economy is now actually built on the back of the government's fiscal situation, that the government's own fiscal situation gets worse if the fiscal situation, if they attempt to make the fiscal situation better. If they try to lower their debt and spend less money, it actually crashes the economy because most of the economy is dependent on the government expenditure now. And another example of this is actually Canada. There was some, it was like a study or just, I don't know, somebody just did the math, I guess, that something like 64% of Canada's GDP is now dependent on government spending. Like, we are totally socialized economies to the point that if the government stops, it obliterates everything because we're all dependent on the government expenditure. The infrastructure doesn't even hold up without them because the infrastructure is not natural anymore at all. None of it actually has anything to do with the market. This is exactly why nobody has a simple freaking refrigerator, that you can't buy a $9,000 car that just works without a billion different things and the 10,000 different Energy Stars and safety ratings and blah, blah, all the gadgets and crap that this giant bloated bureaucratic regulatory apparatus is forcing onto everybody when they just want a cheap car that works. The reason it's so disconnected is because literally the market doesn't matter as much as the financing, as much as the government, as much as the fiscal situation. It is all being run through a giant money-making machine. And I don't mean that like, oh, they're all trying to make money. I mean, it is literally a giant machine that is making money out of thin air, and everybody is chasing that instead of actual customers. The feedback of money has broken, and it has shifted from people who earn money and actually want something from these companies, and it has shifted to the financial institutions that make money and the VCs that lend money in order to create the new wing digit or the new hyped up shit that's going to be the AI car and the AI-based refrigerator and the blockchain-based washing machine, when nobody's actually wants that. It just sounds good, and it's a great way to fuel the next bubble of finance, because you have to fuel the next bubble in order to pay off the last bubble. You have to make bigger returns because it's a Ponzi scheme. It is literally a Ponzi scheme, and now it is self-reliant. If it doesn't get bigger, the entire thing explodes. You can't taper a Ponzi scheme. That's what Elon Musk just found out. And that's why he and Trump are having a divorce, because he thought, being a competent builder and somebody who can actually get crap done, he thought he was actually going to cut the government budget. And then turns out it was all a show. He found like $200 billion in waste in no time. He found hundreds of millions and billions of dollars that were just going to shit that wasn't even listed. Just like, where's it going? I don't know. Just going to somebody's account. Well, what's it used for? I don't know. We're just not even going to mark that down. How long have you been spending it? How long have you been sending money to him? 20 years. From his standpoint, that's an easy solution. Just cut it off. He thinks, or he thought, you could actually just go in and fix something. But you can't taper a Ponzi scheme. And now he's given up. He's like, what the hell is happening? Because now we're spending more than ever. As we always are, every single year. We just always spend more than we ever spent the last time. And it is literally because you cannot taper a Ponzi scheme. There is no way out without a systemic change, because it's the nature of the system that's broken, not the point that we have gotten to. We were at the same, the nature of the system was wrong in the 70s. It's just that now the system is so big and so self-dependent that it's obvious that there's no going back. But it wasn't any different back then. If you ever tried to fix anything in 2 years, it would still just be undone. But we're talking about a system where the whole world's dependent on it. Like, it's the whole thing. This is what we were just talking about in The Great Taking, which I haven't done a guy's take on, but It's coming. I got a bunch of notes and stuff on it. I've just been having a hard time getting recording because of traveling and all sorts of stuff. But it'll probably be one of the next episodes. I think we're gonna have the Meme Factory episode published, which was a whole lot of fun. I think you guys will enjoy that one. And then I'll have the guys take. Sorry for the delay on that, but we definitely need to get into the gray taking because it's such a perfect example of the fact that so many of the things we talk about being an eventual reality have actually happened already. It really was the great financial bubble in 2007, 2008 that cemented in a lot of this stuff. And then over the next 10 to 12 years, they just kind of slowly spread it out from the center. It's like, okay, well, we tested it here. We did a bail-in over here. We use collateral here, and we have court precedent. Like, we now have legal precedent of this being the way that we enforce this. It's like, okay, well, now we know exactly what we need in the structure and exactly the laws that we need. And so now we can get it pushed in Sweden. Now we can get it pushed in Denmark and Germany, all the countries that were the last to basically secede the legal right to own anything. The legal right to own anything in the digital world got superseded by the need for collateral, by a system that is so unbelievably indebted, that is so unbelievably leveraged, that it is still over-leveraged when it is able to take everything, and is able to list everything that literally everybody owns in the entire global financial system as collateral, and it is still over-leveraged. It is still bankrupt when it is putting as collateral things that it supposedly doesn't even own, but it has legally undermined so that it can be stolen for collateral. We live in some wild times. But yeah, we're going to be, we definitely got to get at the guy's take on that one because, oh my God, I highlighted so much stuff from that piece. Like, it's going to be 2 hours probably if I get the recording time, it's going to be a long one. Hopefully I won't have to cut it short, but yeah, just wanted to knock out this one. And like I said, I'm going to save a couple of links, or the links that I have saved. I'm going to try to put them in maybe a playlist or something, or I'll just put them down in the description. Because there's some really great stuff from the Freedom Forum that happened recently. I was watching the story of Kim. I cannot remember the last name right now, and I'm not finding it quickly. But from North Korea, just talking about their trying to escape that regime and how they watched black market TV because they watched media from South Korea, and that it, just how insane it was inside that country and the story of escaping it. And that's one of the things I love about the Human Rights Foundation and all of this stuff is how much they focus on the human story. Because they're so compelling. It's such an interesting thing to kind of see where the kind of spirit of freedom ignites and how much people have to do to break out of that these days, especially with these crazy surveillance systems and these panopticons that Like we do not want the whole world to be China, but we are moving that way. And China is getting worse at the exact same time. But like I said, I actually don't think it's sustainable. I think it's sustainable until it breaks. Like I said, I think it's like a giant ceramic thing. Like, it's incredibly hard and it seems impenetrable and terrible and overpowering right up until it breaks, and then the whole thing just shatters. And I think we're living through kind of both of those, where the world is increasingly hardening and everything is getting bigger and more seemingly impenetrable, but we're also going to probably be living through the collapse, and we will have to pick up the pieces, and hopefully we will have things in place to actually migrate people to and alternative systems that actually work. And it's exactly people like everybody at the Human Rights Foundation that are keeping up with that and putting bounties out. You know, shout out to them for their development fund and the incredible stuff that they've done to make sure that we do have alternatives, and importantly, that those alternatives exist in the most important places all around the world. So check them out and subscribe to the Financial Freedom Report if you haven't. You probably already have, but you should if you haven't, because what are you doing? And then check out the BitKit wallet and some really cool announcements. Prague is like right around the corner. It's like next week or something. And I don't think I should talk about it yet, but there's going to be something really, really cool that I know is going to happen at Prague. And we'll be talking about it on the show. So stay tuned. Check out Synonym and the BitKit wallet for on-chain and Lightning that just works. And I will catch you guys on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. And until then, guys, I am Guy Swan, and that is my two sats. The idea of social justice is that the state should treat different people unequally in order to make them equal. Friedrich August von Hayek.